Welcome to the build-up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes. Please bet responsibly. Visit dunlewy.net for further information.
Welcome along to the build-up on Balls.ie in association with Ladbrokes, our podcast where we get you hyped from the sporting weekend and beyond, in fact, because this week we're obviously going to be focusing heavily on Monday's clash in the Euro 2020 qualifiers against Denmark. It's do or die. To preview that and much more, I am joined by Maurice Brosnan. Mick is away. Maurice, how are you?
Brilliant, yeah. Delighted to be here after a very, very happy week last week with my GA tips. A welcome promotion. A well-earned promotion, if I do say so myself.
to second chair. Well, look, you did very well last week, to be fair. We'll be talking about that a bit later on. But you are not the king of predictions from last week's show. By no means. You're a long way off.
Oh?
So something has finally happened. The big news. We have finally got a winner of two cakes and sports and a sports biography. We have our big shout winner, Mr. Dermot Murray. Congratulations.
That's amazing. So what was his tip?
His tip was an 11-fold football accumulator.
What?
An 11-fold football accumulator. Have you ever seen the like? He started off with PSG to beat Brest. Then he had Barcelona to beat Celta Vigo. Now, you can see here that they're all very heavy favourites, but it's the fact that he got 11 of them right.
Lined up.
Inter Milan to beat Verona. Benfica to beat Santa Clara. Atletico Madrid to beat Espanyol. Feyenoord, now I'm going to make a hames of pronouncing this. Feyenoord to beat RK Walwick. Juventus to beat AC Milan. AZ Alkmaar to beat Emmen. Sporting Lisbon to beat Belenenses. Sporting Lisbon to win their match. Porto to beat Boavista. And Borussia Mönchengladbach to beat Werder Bremen. And it all came off.
That's amazing. Yeah.
That's incredible. Feyenoord won 3-2. They got a goal in the 85th minute to win it. So it was squeaky bum time for Germer, but that is an outrageous prediction.
Yeah, I'm gobsmacked.
There you have it. Finally, someone has won two cakes in the sports biography. Germer, we'll be in touch. Send us an email as well with any suggestions that the sports biography you want. We've got so many of them. We also, if you have any cake preferences, I think Mick did promise to bake the cakes himself. I don't know if he's going to follow through on that now, but we'll be chatting to you later on in the week. Everybody else, it's your chance to try and follow in his footsteps. We still have plenty of cakes and still have plenty of sports biographies to give away. Send us your big shout. Just a prediction that has to be 25-1 or greater on Ladbrokes for the weekend. And if it comes off, you will win yourself that incredible prize. And Maurice, for the first time ever this week, later on in the show, you're going to be trying to win that prize yourself.
I am, yeah. I'm going to land another bloke for carrying over my form from last year. I'm going to actually follow in his footsteps and try and lead my way towards kind of a shrewd selection with a couple of favourites leading the way.
Good stuff. We also have another massive prize giveaway this week. It's giveaway non-stop here, Maurice, because we are giving away two tickets to that match against Denmark on Monday night to one lucky listener. All you have to do to enter the competition is to rate the podcast and leave a review on Apple Podcasts, or if you're listening to a different podcast app, if they allow you to leave reviews, be sure to do it. And then just email thegaffer@balls.ie, put Ireland Denmark tickets in your subject line, just to let us know that you've left a review. Give us your name, because it's hard to contact people through the podcast app or whatever. Just send us a screenshot, whatever, of your review. And that's all you have to do to enter. You'll be entering the competition to win those tickets to Denmark and Ireland. A game which we will be previewing in just a few minutes with Kevin Doyle. We'll also have Stephen Ferris on this week. He's going to get us hyped for the Champions Cup starting this weekend. The rugby never stops, Maurice.
No, it doesn't, yeah. This is a particularly interesting time because this is the tournament that kind of builds the hope that was so brutally crushed for Irish rugby. So starting this weekend, hopefully that'll start.
And then of course we're also going to be talking about the GAA. Like you said, you had a good weekend in your predictions last week. So had I, actually. We seemed to finally
clicked,
come,
yeah.
Just at the right time. As always, we'll be picking our 1-2-3 picks. We'll have our NFL picks this week. You're in the hot seat. You're going to have to do a little bit better than Mick. Although Mick only got the one winner last week. I think a win, a loss, and a push in his NFL picks. But that's it. There's a lot to jam into this show, Maurice. So will we get on with it? Will we chat to Kevin Doyle?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Kevin, this is a bit of a weird build-up in that it's such an important game on Monday against Denmark, but you've also got the friendly against New Zealand coming up. Obviously, there's going to be, Mick was saying that there won't be the same players starting. He's probably not going to start any of the players that will be starting on Monday against New Zealand. But at the same time, have you ever been in that situation before going into that an international camp where it's kind of like all the focus is on the game on Monday, but you kind of have to pay respect? And obviously, there's a lot of big opportunity for a lot of players in the New Zealand game on Thursday.
I was thinking about it. I can't recall. I'm sure it must have happened, but I can't recall. It was always the main game first and then a friendly afterwards. And a lot of lads would leave and go back, and the lads who hadn't played would stay around the squad or whatever. But I can't remember this way around. I wouldn't have liked it. You know, you want to get... You don't want the Mickey Mouse one and everyone's not sure who's not playing, what's going on. And you're trying to concentrate on a bigger game, but training has to be based on the New Zealand game and who's playing in that. So... It's more of a nuisance, to be honest with you. I wouldn't have enjoyed it. Can't remember happening. Maybe it did. Someone will correct me, but it's not. I don't think it's ideal anyway. I'm sure Mick, by his interviews, I think, and by his demeanour, you can tell he's not 100% too delighted about the whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it is that thing you mentioned there as well in terms of training, and that, like, even though maybe the lads might be playing on Thursday, some lads will be starting on Monday. You probably do have to temper training for the game. You know, rest lads, obviously, you're not going to be any available to be ready to fit and go or fight and fit on Thursday. One thing it will offer us is the opportunity to see a couple of new faces. Troy Parrott looks like he's going to start.
Yeah.
Jack Bourne to start. Do you think that there's, like, I don't know what, Mick, it's very hard to tell that if they can put in decent performances that there's a role for them to play on Monday, probably off the bench?
I would say someone like Troy Parrott, if he scores a goal or two, someone with confidence, up front, especially, like, you know, in the forward position, a bit of confidence. If he scores against New Zealand, he can, you know, I don't think he might start, obviously, against Denmark, but you think, you know, he scored a goal or two, you know what, I can throw him on with 10 minutes to go, he might do something for me. He did it with Aaron Connolly, threw him on in the last game, and he made an impact immediately, so, you know, why not? I think younger players, like, you'd love to see Troy Parrott get a run out, start against New Zealand, maybe. See what he can do, because it'd be a great opportunity if he does start to get a couple of goals in that game. But going back to the whole, you know, in the way, as you said, that game, the lads will play, it'll be on Thursday, and then they can't train on Friday, which lads were going to be playing in the main game against Denmark. So it upsets the whole rhythm of the week in the training. Difficult to schedule, making his coaches to schedule training around that and get it right and get everyone trained at the one time to be able to work on his plan for the Denmark game. But sure, it's just the way it is. And they'll deal with it, I'm sure, it's just not ideal.
Kevin, from your own experience, when you're particularly looking at somebody like Troy, I know we were out in Abidjan today and Mick was telling us that for the last 3 days Robbie Keane has been working closely with him. How much of a benefit would that be to a young striker like that?
I'd imagine, like, if, you know, Troy would have grown up watching Robbie play the second half of his career, and you know, he'd have been a hero to him, so you'd imagine it could only be a boost to him. Robbie, fantastic being scoring goals. Any little tip you could get off him, you'd be listening. You should be listening with both ears. I just remember as a player when I first got into the squad and Robbie was there, you know, I was watching everything he was doing. I was so in awe of him, and you know, and just trying to pick up at and see what he would do. He'd always stay afterwards and train at the next year, and it does rub off, yeah. You know, Troy, I hope, I'm sure he is. He seems like a really good lad, Troy, down to earth, works very hard in his game, and seems like a guy who would be watching Ryan and taking it in. Listen, he's got fantastic players who's training with every week at Tottenham who we'd be looking at and trying to get tips off. But to have your international top goal scorer ever giving you some tips and still fit as a fiddle, probably joining the training sessions as well, it'd have to be a boost for him. It would, I'm trying to think of myself at his age, it'd be a massive boost for me. It was just been on the same page as him, so sure. Can't but help him.
Speaking of debuts as well, Mick did mention that as part of that debut, Troy is going to have to sing a song tonight. So he said that last time when Troy was called up to the under-15s, he sang One Direction and he made him promise that he wouldn't do it again. You obviously have experienced that. Can you remember what you sang?
What did I sing? I did a duet with Stephen Kelly. I can't remember. We did, like, it was either Boyzone or Westlife. Like, this is obviously 15 to 20 years ago, so Boyzone and Westlife were still fairly on trend. So, yeah, I can't remember what we sang exactly. It was Boyzone or Westlife. I was surprisingly, you know, any of the new clubs you do it now is the thing you do it, but I'm never nervous. Some lads would be like, there's lads that I won't name names, but would nearly pull out a squad injured just to avoid having to sing a song in front of his teammates. So I remember one particular person, I'm not going to drop a minute, but he really was like very close to throwing in an injury, so he didn't have to do it. But I don't know what to know. I didn't expect anyone to think I was any good, you know. It's, no one expects it to be blaring out something.
Was there anyone who's
fantastically well? So, I don't know what the nervousness is. It's a bit of crack, and it does get lads of a laugh at you. And, for new lads who haven't been in the squad and they don't really know anything, the tension a bit, and it gets involved a bit of fun straight away against the squad.
Is there anyone that sticks out in your memory that was actually great? I know Killian Sheridan has, he seems to love them. He is a club initiation one, as his pinned tweet on Twitter. He was defying anyone to find a better initiation song. Is there any players throughout the Irish squad in the past that you remember as being?
I vaguely remember, well, Shane Long is just a natural singer, so he just blared out something, man, he should be professional. He probably had his guitar doing it. Like, I think he did have his guitar and did it all like a proper solo. Well, we expected him to be good. Caleb Folland threw in a pretty good rap that we didn't see coming from anywhere. All of a sudden, he was rapping and dancing. It brings out, you know, people who Caleb would have been very quiet, and next minute he's rapping, and it gets you to see that personality. It's just a nice icebreaker for two guys in the squad.
I was about to say as well, this week especially, when there's such a big game coming up, like, what were the mood in the camp been like? Obviously, there's probably, you know, there's a bit of negativity about from the last two games, but now that there's just a massive opportunity there, like, you know, we beat Denmark, we're through, it's probably something that, I don't know if there's going to be nerves or people are just champing at the bit to get going.
Yeah, I think champing a bit. I don't even be nervous. I think the sort of pressure's off them, because a lot of people think they're not going to get a result against Denmark. So, sort of, you know what, surprise a few people. A one-off game, like I say, we raise our game, we do well in one-off games. We didn't the last time in Denmark, obviously. There might be a bit of scarring from that. That game is the reason why I probably think Denmark are going to win. I think psychologically, we've a few players there who were involved in that game, and you know, they know what it's like when things aren't going your way. Whereas if that hadn't happened, I'd have really fancied our chances. I just think we up our game in those one-off games. It's not about form, it's not about anything going into this. It's basically a final, and the carrot at the end of it is European Championships and getting to play the game in Dublin next summer. Like, what more do you want to be able to raise yourself for a one-off game? And I think we do. We have players who do raise themselves for one-off games. The amount of times where we're getting stick over the years for bad performances, like the Georgia one, and then the next game we come out and play really well. So that's what I suppose you'd be holding that hope for, that we can put in one of those performances that we've managed to drag out of nowhere over the years.
When you look at a manager then, like Mick, he even said today that he never actually managed in a cup final, but he's played in lots of them, and this kind of felt like building for a cup final for Denmark. Like, would, from his perspective, I imagine he's probably quite as nervous, and that might transmit to the squad as well. You mentioned the fact that you've got the training is disrupted. He actually said today as well that the players who play on Thursday night probably won't feature on Monday. In an ideal scenario, he'd want them to be a week fresh. So those players, we've already been told that they're going to play tomorrow night, know that they probably won't feature on Monday. You've basically got a scenario where you've got two different squads building ahead to a game on the Monday. Like, it does feel like that from a psychological and from kind of a preparation perspective, this is a less than ideal run-in.
Yeah, it is. And so it's not ideal. I suppose when they arranged that plan, that they didn't think that far ahead regarding, you know, what the scenario might be in the Denmark game. It's a hard one. Like, I'm not a fan of massive squads, and having enough players in the squad to be able to play two different 11s like that. You know, I preferred it when I first got into squads, when you had 18 or 22 and that was it. And, you know, there was no, you know, publicized 36 man initial squad standby players and whatever. It meant more to be in that squad 22 and go out and play those players from a 18 man squad or 22 and just, you know, New Zealand game, no one's expecting a whole lot. They're not going to be running around mad. Instead, you're going to have 11 players who are going to be, you know, when Mick said that, players will hear that and they're going, you know what, I'm not really involved. It's just a token game for me now on the Thursday. And I'll be sitting in the stand for the Denmark game. I'm not going to get any time on the pitch. So, as much as you want to be professional you're playing for country, that will be sitting in the back of a few players' minds, and it'll make training for them once the first game is over a bit like, well, you know, I'm not really wanted. I'm just here to play the New Zealand game. So the main guys don't get injured. I'm not going to have any involvement in the big game. It just creates, I think, an atmosphere that's not ideal in the build-up to the Denmark game. I never liked it. I preferred a smaller group, a group that was together, all sort of on the same page. It's difficult. Like, how can Nick justify playing as we're going to play on the Monday? You know, he needs to keep fresh and injury-free. We can't afford to get, like, Dave McGoldrick injured. So you see why he does it. It's a tough one. He has no choice with the organisation of the game. I just don't think it should have been organised. Why would we be playing New Zealand on a friendly 4 days before, 3 days before a big qualifier game? When you imagine the crowd's not going to be big, there's not going to be too much money made over anyway. It's going to probably cost us money if we end up losing the Denmark game, maybe through one bit of lack of preparation or a training session you could do because players weren't able to do it because they were recovering from the game on the Thursday night. I don't know. I think it's short-sightedness personally. There's no need for it. We have enough friendlies. God, we play friendlies all the time. Played Bulgaria like 2 months ago on a nothing friendly as well. There's just no need to be playing New Zealand on a Thursday night when you have such a big game coming up.
We mentioned Aaron Connolly earlier on, obviously missing these games. He was kind of the standout person that kind of had sprung from nowhere to that we thought could have an impact on this Irish team. Looking at how we're going to beat Denmark on Monday, has anyone caught your eye in the intervening period? Even like, you know, Seanie Maguire's on in great form, pressing are going really well, but yeah. I don't know if Mick's going to, he hasn't really used him much. It's just
no, he used him at the beginning, didn't he? He played him, didn't Seanie start the one of Mick's first games? He really likes David McGoldrick, Mick, and he likes his ability to hold up the ball. And he's done really well for Mick since he took over. So I can't see him doing anything other than playing David up front on his own and everyone else sort of try to get up and support him when he holds the ball up. I don't think he'll go at two centre forwards. I like Seanie Maguire. He's a very good player, but he's not the one to be up there on his own. It'd be interesting to see him up there with David McGoldrick, but I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah, other than that, I said to you before, I would obviously like to see Shane on in the squad, not starting maybe or whatever. Nick definitely going to start with David McGoldrick, but, you know, something that pace, Aaron Connolly, when his pace, when he came on against Georgia, you know, a few nothing balls and he was in over the top on goal. And I feel someone, you know, we don't have that with Aaron Gunn. Why wouldn't you have Shane Long in for that option, that pace? So listen, other than that, it's going to be pretty much the same as. I don't see anyone else. I don't see Mick chancing anyone else in such a big game, unless maybe Troy scores a goal or two against New Zealand. You think maybe he can come on for, if needed, for 10 or 15 minutes and be a hero.
How do you see, so I'm going to guess you see the game the same as ourselves, probably playing out, and that Ireland are probably going to try and keep this tight and maybe snatch a winner late on. We're going for we were saying earlier, probably is it going to be a headed assist to a headed goal at this stage? Just getting Shane Duffy or
set piece. I see Shane Duffy probably last ditch tackles all night long, blocking balls, throwing himself in front of shots. Probably Denmark creating a lot of chances, not taking them, and us, you know, sitting in deep and hoping to nick a goal from a set piece or a breakaway or whatever. I don't think we played when the Switzerland game at home. I really enjoyed that game. I thought we were a bit more open. We conceded chances to them. We created a good few chances ourselves by taking a few risks. I don't think we'll take those risks against Denmark. I think we'll be a lot tighter, a lot deeper. Which I don't think works for us. I think we're better on the front foot and pressurising right up the pitch, giving teams no chance to get on top. We'll sit back against Denmark and they'll get into a rhythm and have a million passes. And we'll just hope to break. I'd prefer us to be on the front foot and really making them feel uncomfortable from the first minute. We'll get on the front foot. If we go 1-0 down and with half an hour to go, we'll be up the pitch and we'll be pressing them or whatever. But, you know, I'd like to see us do that from the start. I think it suits us, suits the players we have, but we don't ever seem to do it until we really have to.
Why do you think that is? Because that's something that's been a problem throughout Martin O'Neill's reign as well.
I don't know. It's a fear. I don't know. I think it's just a fear of Ireland. No, let's not concede and we'll do something in the last half an hour. It's an easy way of staying in the game, I suppose. It's an easier way to organise in a short period of time together. It's easier to get lads organised to sit back and, you know, sit in and then hope we get up the pitch at some stage later in the game, worry about that later in the game and try to get some of that piece. But it just creates our lack of ability to pass the ball. It makes that worse. It, you know, gets the crowd bored and subdued. I think it demoralizes the players. You're sitting there and watching a team pass it a million times around you and you're just sitting back. And then, you know, whereas we have energy, we have players who might be the most technically gifted team in the world, but we have players who can run and will run all day. Use that enthusiasm, that energy to do it higher up the pitch. Like Denmark and like nothing better than us sitting back and they're comfortable and like, pass it around away from home. They can build into the game. Everyone get a touch and it's all nice and icy. I would just not, it's easy for me to say I'm not a manager, but I would prefer to be on the front foot in their faces from the first minute. Make them hate playing, make their midfielders and Christian Eriksen hate wanting to get on the ball because everybody is right up into them, not giving them a second to breathe, making it really uncomfortable, and getting the crowd behind you from the first minute. The crowd would really love it. I would love it anyway. And I think we'd be better that way. We wouldn't have to, when we win the ball back, we're so deep. We're not able to pass that. We end up, we have so many players back behind the ball. We have no choice. We kick it long, we've no one up there. It's, you know, it just comes back and it's a cycle. You go back again, we sit. It just keeps coming back. And it's grand and we'll be fine and all our players are able to do it. But it doesn't get the best out of us. It's not enjoyable to watch. And then we aren't good enough. We don't have good enough players who can pass it all the way from the back to the front and break teams down that way. I just think if we're high up the pitch, closing down, we win the ball high up the pitch. It means we don't have to break teams down. We don't need those creative players because we've won it right up the pitch. I keep saying it's a bit like how Tottenham and Spurs play. We obviously don't have that type of player, but Tottenham and Liverpool, you watch Liverpool play, they win the ball so high up the pitch, they don't actually have to, you know, a lot of the time their goals don't come from fantastic football, it's from just, they're such high energy, high press, causing mistakes, and then it only takes one pass being on goal instead of trying to be a Man City and play out from the back and be perfect, scored a perfect goal. It just wouldn't suit Ireland, obviously, we don't have them players, and I just think, you know, everyone talks about Ireland and our DNA or whatever and our energy and enthusiasm. It would just suit us to be that high press and never give teams a second, which we do, but it's all in the last half hour of a game when we've no choice to do.
Yeah, exactly. Before we let you go, we have to make the big decision. You have to go to decide between heart or head here. What's your score prediction for the Denmark game?
Head is 2-1 to Denmark. My heart is obviously us holding out and scoring in the last 10 minutes, winning 1-0. If we hadn't had that in Denmark the last time, I'd go with my heart. But after that game, I'd go with my head for this one if we won. And hold my heart.
Yeah, hopefully our heads are wrong. Kevin, thanks very much for chatting to us.
No worries, lad.
Great stuff there from Kevin, as always. Morris, it's hard, you know, to be enthusiastic about this in terms of, or be hopeful, really. You know, we're hoping that a late goal. We didn't mention Kieran Clark there, another man who could turn up. He could be a potential goal scorer, given that he's been prolific for Newcastle in recent seasons. How do you see this going? Do you agree with Kevin? Have we got, or is there anything else that you can see that, you know, we might be able to throw or spring a surprise at Denmark?
I don't think so. I don't think, like, I in fairness to McCarthy, all week in every press conference, he's been pretty upfront about the idea that, like, they know us and we won't really be springing anything new either. Like, he's talking about, he hasn't seen New Zealand haven't played a competitive game for 18 months. He hasn't seen them. He hasn't made it his business to see them because it's a friendly. And he has said, you know, it's a million miles from the Denmark game, but, like, not to diminish what it means for the players who will play, but nevertheless, that game is obviously the more important one. And similarly, he said, you know, in terms of prepping for Denmark, like, they know what they're going to bring and I don't know what they're going to bring. And, like, to be honest, I think in an ideal world, McCarthy would fast forward to the last 3 or 4 minutes of this game. It's nil all and Ireland try and nick a goal then. Maybe they have a long ball up to McGoldrick, etc. Maybe they have a corner or something like that, and that's the scenario he wants to manufacture. It's bizarre for fans and for media and for anybody watching on, though, like, because this game is ultimately, like, it's like this week is kind of like Schrodinger's McCarthy, because, like, we don't know, has his reign been a success or a failure, because it literally will all be decided come Monday night. Even if he doesn't win on Monday night, maybe the playoffs will offer some sort of redemption. But right now, like the this kind of, you touched it off with Kevin there, this lingering criticism of the style of play, the kind of belligerence to maybe change it up, to introduce some new players, to you know, give some fresh faces. We're going to see three of them now on Thursday, but like in terms of a competitive atmosphere, all of those criticisms go away if Ireland win against Denmark on Monday. It disappears.
Like, it's so weird, because the last, when we played Denmark in the World Cup qualifier, there was so much, obviously it was a playoff, there was so much hope, so much optimism. We got the draw away from home. It was just massive. I remember we were in the office, we were filming rosaries and pray for us videos and all this for ex-footballers. It just obviously ended up in complete disaster. And now it could be the opposite, where we're downplaying our chances, we're kind of a bit pessimistic and into it, and then all of a sudden it'd be like, holy crap, we've just beaten Denmark, we're in the Euros. Like, it could be...
One result will change everything, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Again, look, it may not happen. It's frustrating as well. Like, I think the 3-5-2 is something that is worth sticking with in the long term, but it's such an important game, he's probably going to go back. It didn't work against Switzerland and he had to change back, so he's probably going to go back to, I'm probably going to go back to 4-5-1, as Kevin said, not stick with the two up front like he did with Conley.
I think if he was going to go to the 5/3 at the back, it would have incorporated Clark, now that he's back in form, into it. And the fact that all the indications are that Clark is going to play on Thursday night means that that's definitely not going to happen. So you're going to see some sort of iteration of, I think Clark and Kevin Long will start in centre back on Thursday night. Leo Connor, he's already confirmed, is going to start. I think Derek Williams can play on the left. Yeah. The likes of Jack Byrne, you're going to see him. The only, like, the intrigue is, like, say we'll see Jack Byrne, we'll see Troy Parrott, probably see Sean Maguire, maybe Scott Hogan. The intrigue is in the middle, because, like, even though I know Kevin touched on the squad being big, it isn't that big. Like, it is 27 players, and if you, like, there will have to be inevitably some crossover, even if that's just in terms of subs. Yeah. So in that circumstance, like, does he start? If Horan or Brown start in midfield, I think that's a strong indicator that the other one will probably start on Monday night. So whoever is going to partner Glenn Whelan is kind of like his, like, anchor with Jeff Hendrick. I think that's what you'd see, an indicator there, maybe, in terms of what he'll do there. But other, like, in, that's, again, it is a slim picking, I guess, looking ahead to...
But there is definitely things, like, when you're thinking about what player is going to come on and change a game, possibly. There's going to spring something that we're not expecting. And you're looking at Jack Byrne, Trey Parrott, Shawnee Maguire. These are those type of attacking players, even, you know, Alan Brown to an extent, although we've seen plenty of them. And by, like, yeah, you have to imagine that, like, if Troy Parrott goes and he's 40-1 to score a hat trick against New Zealand, if he goes and scores a hat trick, he has to be featured on Monday.
Well, I'll tell you, somebody asked the question today to Mickey McCarthy and said, if in the unlikely circumstance that Troy Parrott comes and scores a hat trick, what does that mean? The media clamour that would inevitably come with ahead of Monday to get him in the team, how would you deal with that? He's McCarthy. And Mick McCarthy said, I hope he does score a hat trick, and when the clamour comes, I'll deal with it then. And to my mind, I think there's no way we're going to see Troy Parrott on Monday night, regardless of what he does on Thursday.
This is the football show as well. If he does score a hat trick, I'm going to have to eat me before December. But there is to a very large extent, I can see where Mick McCarthy's coming from, in terms of the Troy Parrott hasn't, you know, he's barely kicked a ball in senior professional football yet. Whereas you're looking at someone like Maguire or even Hogan or Collins that just have way more experience, and this is a massive game. And I go, there's such a clamour to get into play, and like, but you have to take that into account as well.
Yeah, no, I absolutely, that's a very fair point. And I think, like, the same probably goes for a couple of other circumstances as well. I suppose the downside is that if they do end up losing on Monday, the criticism would be that they should have been introduced sooner. Like, we should have seen somebody like Malumbi even as well, who's not in the squad. We could have seen these players sooner. So I think the power criticism will still come depending on Monday. And that's why it's such an intriguing game, because it'll define a legacy, you know.
Definitely. Before we move off football, we've got to make a 1-2-3 picks. This is your opportunity to win €100 cash on ladbrokes.com. You can play it for absolutely free. You have to predict three of the weekend's football matches. If you get all three right, you win €100 cash. If you only get two, you get €5 free bet. And if you just manage the one, you'll still get a euro free bet on ladbrokes.com. This weekend, it's always tricky with the international break. There's a couple of games here, Morris, that you're going to have to, I think you could be sticking finger in the air stuff here, but if you can manage to win €100 cash with these three games, are doing really well. Azerbaijan against Wales.
I'm going to say 2-1 to Wales.
2-1 to Wales at Highbury. I'm going to go, I like your 2-1 actually. No, I'm going to say 2-0 Wales. Then we've got Northern Ireland against the Netherlands. Northern Ireland, obviously, were really unlucky in defeat away to the Netherlands in the last, in the reverse fixture of this, but a lot has changed since then. Michael O'Neill gone to Stoke. Will that have a negative impact on the team? They're still in the hunt to qualify for the Euros here. Like, this is a massive, massive game for them.
Yeah, I saw Ronald Koeman was pretty interesting talking about this. So they potentially are going to be without Gini Wijnaldum, who it looks like suffered a pretty bad injury after this. Initial reports that he might even miss Liverpool's next game, which would obviously be a huge blow. And then up front then, they've kind of got a bit of depth of options, so that you might see somebody like Ryan Babel. or maybe even Luke de Jong from Ajax. They've got like, and this is the thing about Holland always, they've got so many options. I just think they probably have too much for Northern Ireland team, which, as you mentioned, have to contend with the fact that they know their manager is now dividing his time between club and country. I'll say 3-1 Holland.
3-1. I'm going to go, do you know what? No. I'm going to go 1-0 Northern Ireland. I think they came really
close to the
Netherlands. I think it's going to be a swan song for O'Neill. Everybody, the players are going to want to get behind him, and obviously they're like that already as it is, so this is even more of a sort of siege mentality almost, you know, that this is, we're doing this before our manager goes, whatever it is. And the fact that they were so close to beating them a couple of months ago
before they came, Holland came from behind in that game,
last 10 minutes just turned it around.
It does still mean something for Holland though, given that you've got the way seedings could work for the finals. If it's a Holland team without, as it looks like, Wijnaldum and Memphis Depay, then suddenly you're looking at a whole different prospect. Yeah,
underdog story here. It's heart rooted ahead. I'm going to go Northern Ireland. I'm going to beat them. I'm going for the underdog. Then Kosovo against England. I'm going 4-0 England here.
I'll do the same. I think
it's very hard to call that one. If you call that one, you're doing well. And probably given that I predicted England to beat Czech Republic the last time, and then they actually lost for the first time in a qualifier in over 10 years, they're probably going to get beaten this Kosovo now. But that is all. That is it for the football chat. Let's chat to Stephen Ferris. He's going to get us hyped for the return or the new season of the Champions Cup this weekend. So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what it's like we're getting hyped tonight. Cause if a strike, it ain't for your good health, but I won't strike if you just... Stephen, I was all set to start this off by asking you about how difficult it is to get back into the swing of club rugby after a World Cup exit, and what's it like, you know, how hard it is to refocus and all that kind of thing. And then I was looking back at the 2011 Heineken Cup at the time, and I'm looking at Ulster against Clermont, Ulster win, Stephen Ferris man of the match. So it looks like you had no difficulty refocusing after that.
I can actually remember it well. I think Ian Humphrey scored a last pitch try when we played them at the Kingspan. I think it can be quite tough, especially when the Irish teams come under immense criticism. You even look at the Interpro Derby, Ulster versus Munster. It was very lackluster, lots of stop starts. Jacob Stockdale had a very poor game, who's just off the back of a poor World Cup. You know, Peter Romani was very, very quiet, apart from the three line-out deals that he had. You know, there wasn't much more to his game. And you know, a few other people that were put in there, and like Chris Farrell, you know, didn't really impress. And I think generally it's pretty tough, and it's not just kind of getting your head around the World Cup. It's getting back into the actual setup, learning the plays, learning the way that Stephen Larkham or Dwayne Peel or Dan McFarlane wants the team to play. And Leo Cohn, fortunately for him, he's got such a big squad that's done so well over the last 5 or 6 weeks in the Pro 14 that he can integrate, the internationals, drip feed them back into the setup, and that their team won't really change. Where I think Munster is slightly different, and Ulster, when they had those two or three players like Sir Henderson, like Sir Stockdale coming back in, Jordy Murphy as well, it definitely adds something. So, long-winded probably answer to your question, but some people find it easy and seamless to slip back into the system, or others find it more difficult. And the ones that find it more difficult seem to want to get back on the pitch quicker, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and like if you look at like Leinster as well, they also are benefiting from a match they probably should win this weekend. Whereas for Ulster, away to Bath, like it's one of those. It's a huge game already in this pool. Like if they could win that, if they could manage to get over the line there, it could be fantastic for them going forward. They would set them up really well.
Yeah, Mark. You know, I think you always target that first game. It doesn't matter what competition it's in. But the Heineken Cup, I think if you offered Ulster a losing bonus point from this game right now, they might take it. Just because, you know, Bath come off a good victory at the weekend against Northampton, even being down to 14 men with Alec Brew getting sent off. Ulster just off the back of a local derby defeat, didn't particularly play that well, didn't offer that much in attack. But I think down at the recreational ground where I've played, and I've beaten Bath a couple of times down there, and we always seem to get drawn against each other in the European Cup. It's a real arm wrestle down there. The pitch is always generally quite wet. At this time of the year, it's very muddy. The amount of rain there's been in England over the last couple of weeks has been colossal. So I expect it to be a bit of the old school rugby, you know, set piece dominated, bit stop start, and won or lost up front, like most games are. But I think in particular, this game is going to be huge up front. So the likes of Marcel Kutsia, you know, battling it out. I'm hearing that Sam Underhill is going to be playing for Bath, which is extraordinary. I hear he's going to be talking out for those guys. So, you know, that's a huge, huge plus for them. They're just probably looking to get the European window out of the way and then give him his rest. But it's a tough place to go. I think the bookies have it only a 3-point game or something like that. So they're expecting it nice and tight. And I expect it nice and tight. But I just feel that also travelling away from home off the back of a defeat and Bath winning at home, you know, the odds are stacked in their favour.
Stephen, can I ask about the psychology of what you just mentioned of the Champions Cup? Like, I obviously, you know, you've got bonus points in the World Cup and stuff like that, but given the nature of this competition, they are just so crucial. We even saw that last year where you look at Ulster beating Leicester at home and then how crucial it was that they got that win away at Scarlets and how that set them up to progress to a quarterfinals. When you mentioned the fact that they might be happy with a losing bonus point this weekend, does that implement their psychology at any stretch of the imagination? Like, if you look at the scenario where you see Joey Carberry settle for the losing bonus points, is that something that's preordained, pre-planned before a game, or is that an in-the-moment decision?
No, it's not an in-the-moment decision, and it's not a preordained one either, where it's more or less you get the 60 minutes and you're within 4 or 5 points, and of course you're going to try and get the win. But when the clock ticks down, the conversations between the pack leader and the playmaker, like so if it's Billy Burns this weekend and Ian Henderson chatting, you know, they will have a discussion 5 minutes before the final whistle to say, look, let's play in the right areas of the pitch, especially if they're in their own half and, you know, they play a couple of strike plays and they don't really get anywhere. And sometimes, you know, that conversation has to be executed, and to take away a losing bonus point is sometimes, well, it is, of course, it's better than nothing, but I think, yeah, in general, those conversations are had as the match goes on. And as you talked about there, guys, they are really, really, really important. And, you know, you look at Ulster last year. I think a lot of people were maybe looking at the Ulster group last year and, you know, Scarlets and a few other ones, a few of the other teams that have played reasonably well over the couple of years. And then last year, they played bloody awful. And, you know, I think Ulster will certainly have to play a lot better this year round to try and get to a quarter final. But, I think, you know, decisions are made on the hop in big games. And, you know, there's no other not a big game to come in terms of this Bath-Ulster game.
You'd expect Leinster to win fairly easily this weekend, but now with Saracens saying that they're going to focus mostly on domestic football, trying to stay up, are Leinster clear favourites now for you for this? Are they a good bit ahead of the rest of the pack?
Well, they're definitely not ahead of Saracens by any stretch of imagination. Saracens gave them a bit of a doing last year in the final. I think, you know, that talk of their focus is on the league. If this points ban is enforced or points reduction is enforced, they're a quality outfit, guys. You know, they beat Gloucester in Gloucester that last weekend with seven real internationals to come back into the team. They're going to Racing 92. I actually fancy them to beat Racing 92. I think Racing are 5-point favourites in this match, but Saracens on the 3G pitch like they're used to as well. I think that they're going to do a number on Racing, and know, sometimes it's good to deflect some situations, and I, in my own personal opinion, that's what I feel that they're doing, is trying to deflect any negativity around the Heineken Cup and just say, look, we're focusing on the league and all that. But, you know, I can guarantee you guys that the 15 players are going to take the pitch for Saracens this weekend. We'll be going to get the win, and it's as simple as that.
And with regard to, I suppose, the other match you're looking at, Munster probably should beat Ospreys as well fairly easily, but Connacht against Montpellier, it's Connacht's first time obviously back in a couple of seasons in the Champions Cup. It's a tough ask for them, but they're well capable of winning this game.
They are. I watched Connacht beat Toulouse about 4 or 5 years ago in the Heineken Cup or Champions Cup as it was then, and you know, just looking at the two sides, it was like men against boys. It really was. Connacht ended up going like 15-3 down or something, and then, you know, the sports grind came alight, and alive, and everybody got behind the team. I think Mundiaki had a man of the match performance, and they completely turned the game on its head, and they ran the big Toulouse pack ragged. They really did, and I think they got to get back to a little bit of the Pat Lam way of keeping the ball in play for long periods of time, using their skill set that we all know that they have, and trying to outplay this Montpellier team. Instead of, if you're going to go head on head and have car crashes all day long, it's only going to go one way, because Montpellier are a big side. They're sitting mid-table in the top 14, and you know, we all know that they're capable of a big performance. So for me, I certainly believe that Connacht have it in them to get a result, but at the same time, they're coming up against a bit of a juggernaut. But saying that, you know, Connacht after the display last weekend will be bitterly disappointed. I'm sure almost embarrassed the way they went down to Leinster at home. So they'll be looking to rectify that and, you know, give the crowd something to cheer about. It's good to have Heineken Cup rugby back at the sports ground. So, you know, guys, I think I'm going to go for Connacht sneaking a little win there. And just a touch on the Ospreys, Munster game. Ospreys are in dire straits. They really are. There's no players to pick from, loads of injuries. I know there's a few internationals to come back, but, you know, getting beat by Southern Kings last weekend, Southern Kings first away win in the Pro 14. I think the Ospreys are in a bit of a bad place. So, yeah, Munster, I think 10 points favourites for that game. I would be backing them all day long.
I guess when you're looking at the Munster and Connacht game, Stephen, it kind of reinforces the idea of just how strong a team like Saracens or Leinster are, particularly just, I think, in terms of depth. Like, I think Connacht and Munster, if they're their perfect 15 out, would challenge anybody on their day. And then you look at a Connacht team who won't have probably three of their first choice locks in Quinru, Thornbury or Alton Delan. You saw the difference it made when Finney Beelan went off injured against Leinster. Even this stuff with Munster, kind of the speculation about what exactly they're going to do at out half, and their kind of depleted numbers there. I suppose it just kind of reinforces the idea that in particular tournament like this, when you've got squads like Saracens or Leinster, it's just so hard for any other teams to compete with them.
Yeah, it is difficult. You look at the squad that Leinster have built up, and I think, you know, Leinster, to a certain degree, have given the young lads opportunity, but the young lads who have been given the opportunity have actually taken it. And you see guys like Rowan Keller, who's leapfrogged, you know, James Tracy and probably Sean Cronin. I think, you know, guys who are given the opportunity, it's the younger guys banging on the door that need to, when they're given a chance, bloody take it. And sometimes I've witnessed with Ulster over the last couple of years that there's been 4 or 5 young guys that have been given a chance, but they haven't really stepped up to the plate. Is that because of their ability? Is it because they're not getting enough exposure at that level? Or, you know, is the academy system not as good as it is down in Leinster? Is the school system not as good as it is in Leinster or the academy system in Saracens? It's really hard to pinpoint, to put your finger on. But, you know, it's a conveyor belt of raw talent that's coming out of Leinster, raw athletes that's coming out of Leinster. Other guys like Max Deegan and you know, Scott Penny, who are just hanging around and, you know, playing really, really well every time they're given a chance. Where, you know, guys like Matty Ray and you know, Nick Timoney, who have been around Ulster for the last 3 or 4 years, you know, they're not getting these man on the match performances. They're not putting their hand up for Irish selection. They just seem to be, you know, game by game, just getting through it. And I think, you know, young guys, especially with Ulster or Munster that are coming through, they're given that chance. They really need to try and grab it the way like something like Ronan Keller is doing, or other guys within the Saracen setup. You look at manager Langi's cousin, who's been out half for them. You know, just taking his chance, and other guys in there as well. So, yeah, it's squad depth is so, so important. And as the season goes on, you're going to lose players, you're going to get some players back from injury. But wouldn't it be great to be in a position like Leinster where you have maybe 35 guys that you could put your faith in, week out, to do the job for you?
Yeah, on that actually, just a slight tangent, but while I have you, I haven't had a chance to ask you about this really. The remedy for that, the remedy for to build a squad, like you look at the Munster particularly, I think, are an interesting scenario in that, you know, you look at the reported signings of D'Alande and Snyman, two World Cup winners, two brilliant players who will certainly add to them. But that seems to be like a... There does seem to be a focus on, I suppose, looking to outside influences. When they had a problem with their centre, it was looking to Chris Farrell. When they had a problem at scrum half, it was looking to Albie Mathewson to plug a gap there. And I'm wondering, like, is the fact that you're talking about players getting the opportunity to step up, like, in that scenario, Craig Casey won't get an opportunity to step up because his path is blocked by Nick McCarthy, who's come down from Leinster, and Albie Mathewson currently, and obviously Conor Murray is going to start there. You look at guys like... Goggin or even Arnold in the centre, their path is suddenly blocked by whether that be Farrell, who, you know, is obviously Irish qualified, but someone like D'Alande coming in now as well, who will block his path as well. Like, how do you find the balance is being struck in whatever about Connacht in a scenario like Munster's?
Yeah, I think, lads, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, everything's been built towards making the Irish team a success. Like, you know, so players have moved around. Why has Jack McGrath come up to Ulster? Why has Jordy Murphy came to Ulster? Because they're going to get game time. They're going to get exposure week in, week out. No, they weren't getting that at Leinster, so that was helping their chances of playing for Ireland. You know, look at Chris Farrell. Why did he come back and go to Munster? Because he wants to try and play for Ireland, where I think now Munster and... No, even Ulster at the minute, you know, they signed Carter, they signed Matt Baddies. Like, why did they have to sign Matt Baddies? Like, Ulster are blessed in the back three, but they feel that they need a bit more quality in that area to push them on to the next level. So Munster have never really replaced Paul O'Connell. You know, this talisman, this, you know, enforcer of Jean Klein, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I haven't seen that yet. And I don't think Munster have either, and that's why they're trying to sign Snyman. So, you know, they probably feel that they need a bit more physicality in the midfield. If Chris Farrell is away at Six Nations duty or Scannell is away at Six Nations duty, but I can guarantee you, lads, that, you know, these big name players are going to play in the big games. You know, Chris Farrell is going to be left on the bench for Munster and D'Alande is going to be starting. But why? It's because they want to win. Like, Munster, Ulster, Leinster and Connacht as provinces, they want to do bloody well. They want to try and further themselves in the Heineken Cup. They want to get to the latter stages of tournaments. And to be able to do that, you've got to have good quality. And I think at the minute, you know, you take out Leinster and you take out Saracens, I think sometimes, you know, the provinces are lacking a little bit of quality and maybe a little bit of firepower. So, you know, from looking from the outside in, you know, signing D'Alande, signing Snyman, signing Carter, who's playing for Ulster, I think, you know, it's only a good thing for the game as long as it doesn't become like it was maybe 6 or 7 years ago where, you know, you're signing 5 or 6 foreign players just to try and, you know, get a trophy at the end of it. I think there's got to be a fine balance too.
You gave us a couple of predictions there already with Connacht to win their 5-6 with Ladbrokes, Munster -10. With Ulster, as you're saying, Bath, 3-point favourites, would you be hoping Ulster can beat the handicap there?
Yeah, I would hope, but I wouldn't go with it. I would probably go with Bath -3. It's always been a tight affair between Ulster and Bath. The Connacht games, it's a tough one to call, and you know what, I would probably stay away from it, but I would definitely go Munster -10. I think the Ospreys are in a world of pain at the minute. You know, their form is absolutely atrocious, probably the worst in Europe at the minute. I know they're due a couple of guys back, but I don't think it's going to make a huge bit of difference. And the way Munster played against Ulster last week, they're going to be significantly better because Munster were poor. I think they actually got away with one against Ulster, considering Ulster had the upper hand, especially in the set piece. So Graham Rowntree will have had a lot of work and a lot of talking done this week, along with Stephen Larkham and you know, Van Grand. So I would go for Ulster. Bath -3, Munster -10, and what's Leinster -21, is it, or something?
-21,
yeah. I think that's, you know, that's a bit far out, but at the same time, it depends on weather. It's an afternoon kickoff too, so guys, I'd be likely to go with the 21 points. I think Leinster in such a rich vein of form. I can see them getting scoring four tries, no issues. Are Bennett and Treviso going to score 14 to 20 points? They possibly could, but I could see Leinster scoring 40 points, you know? So I would probably go with Leinster minus 21, believe it or not.
There you have it. Thanks very much for chatting to us, Stephen. Hopefully it's an enjoyable weekend of rugby.
No worries, Mark. Cheers. Appreciate it, guys.
Great stuff there from Stephen. And if you are having a bet this weekend at any of the rugby, be sure to gamble responsibly. And you can visit dunlewy.net for more information. Morris, I know I've asked Stephen there as a player trying to refocus and get ready for, you know, the Champions Cup comes at you so quickly. But as a fan, it's very much the same. You're like, Jesus, what? The Champions Cup? All right, hold on a minute. What's going on here?
Yeah, it's like, I mean, this is the nature of the... We talked about this on the last week's podcast as well. It's just the nature of the rugby calendar this year that it just feels like there's... It's just relentless. And, like, you know, that's... You mentioned as a plan. Can you imagine how grueling that is for a player? Like, think about the punishment Sam Wonderhill put his body through when you watched him in the World Cup. Like, this is a guy who's relentlessly crashing into people. That's his job. It's what he did. And there's a potential that he'd be thrown back into action already. Like, it's incredible. Like, he went through... You don't just think about that in terms of games. Like, think about the warm weather training he went through in Italy back in July. Think about an Eddie Jones training camp that has been building for 4 years for one tournament, and then playing in that tournament, and then less than 2 weeks later he's back out playing with his in a European game. Like, he's back out and in the middle of it. From that perspective, like, they're the two. It's, you know, from a fan's perspective, you're looking at like Ulster, huge clash, a game that could, you know, set them up perfectly for the rest of the season. Connacht's European rugby back in Galway, you know, a kind of a flair French team coming to town, a chance to welcome the whole... If you're down in Galway, the whole place is just green, coming out to sports in the sports ground. I think that'll be a sellout on Sunday. Whereas from a Munster perspective, you're looking at an Ospreys team who are in dire straits, and Leinster, who, you know, could start by a relatively comfortable win as well. Like, so even from a fan's perspective, it might be kind of a variance of emotions. But yeah, like, it's a lovely way to keep the year exciting, because you've got coming off the back of Interpros and straight into Europe, and then you're building into another round of Europe as well, and before you know it, you'll be into knockout stages.
You've got the Christmas sides, then you've obviously got, you know, the Pro 14 at Christmas. You're going to have the Interprovincial
more Interpros,
Six Nations. It's just relentless. And even like mentally, like, you have to imagine, you go back into these provinces, the players that were there that didn't go to the World Cup, they're going to be a tight-knit group. They've been aiming for, you know, get off to a great start in the Pro 14. And it must be just so hard mentally as a player to readjust, to go like, I actually don't have any time to switch off here. I've gone from a really pressured environment where we're aiming to, you know, get to a World Cup final, get to a semi-final, at least, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden I'm straight back in, and I don't have any time. It was not like we're saying, like, even like Underhill is a brilliant example for Bath, but even like Henderson's going to start probably this weekend for Ulster. You have like as Ferris mentioned, Stockdale maybe in poor form, having to try and regain that very quickly.
Yeah, and it's I mean, the same goes for a load, but like, it's the psychology that is actually fascinating. Like, what does it feel like? Conor Murray coming off the bench last weekend has to come back in. Like, that the Johnny Sexton, when he was interviewed at the Champions Cup launch, said that the hurt from this World Cup will probably last a lifetime for players. So you have to that's, you know, in terms of processing that, and then as well as that, you're coming into what is effectively a brand new tournament, like a new competition that you need to hit the ground running. Like, how did they deal with that? Like, how did you prepare yourself for something like that? And like, I think that's, especially for Munster, is a really interesting psychology, because you've got like so many different moving parts there. You've got a brand new coaching ticket effectively in Graham Rowntree and Stephen Larkin coming in. You've got a load of players returning from a World Cup, staggered returning. You have to remember that as well. This isn't a group coming back. This is, you know, cores of the group, like Conor Murray coming straight back in, somebody like Joy Carberry who's out injured again, who's going to, you know, not going to see again for another couple of weeks. So like, it is really staggered, and I think managing that is as equally as kind of pressing for these teams as, you know, is getting ready for this game.
It's definitely set up for an intriguing weekend. But you know what, Morris, it's time to talk about GAA. So this weekend, Morris, you're looking at, it's a quiet weekend on the hurling front. There's a couple of games on. You've got Ballyhale Shamrocks against St Martins, and St Mullins against Rathdowney Errol are the two standout ones there in the Leinster Senior Hurling Championship. St Mullins obviously had a massive upset against beating Coola in the last round, but they're actually outsiders going into this. They're 7-4.
I think that's a massive price. a huge price for a team that bet Kula. Like, you look at it and you say, right, this is a Carlo club versus a Laois club. You lean towards the Laois club. But then you're, at the same time, like, Carlo were above Laois in terms of, like, Carlo were an All-Ireland team this year. They weren't, like, they won the Drum with Donna last year. Were fairly competitive. They've got ones of a young guy like Marty Kavanagh, who anybody who would have watched Carlo this year, he was their star forward. To get that win against Kula, I know Kula lost Conor Callaghan Miduchi again, but even still, that is still probably kind of a standout shock of the year. I think our approach to East Kerry and to Barislay last week was they should, that price should be less.
Yeah, like, so Barislay were 6-5, East Kerry were evens. So both of them ended up winning.
Yeah, so we looked at that and we said East Kerry shouldn't be evens. That might be looking at Crokes, their reputation going for their, you know, their eighth county title, this team going for with all momentum behind them, as opposed to maybe looking at kind of, you know, a bit closer. And I think that, like, in a weekend like this, right, Mark, there's absolutely scope to you for you look at this and to say that, you know, there isn't any it wouldn't be as eye-catching as other weekends in terms of, if you know, if you had a fancy either way. But when you see something like that, that's like, I think there's enough appeal in that to think that maybe there's scope for that's, I guess, that's like, what, you know, there's nothing nicer than kind of when you get a small bit of value. And I think that's what you're looking at there. Even, you know, to see, it's a really novel hurling pair up as well, like two teams that are both going for their first sense, which I think is great. Like, the, we spoke about the hype or lack thereof for the club championship last week. I think those are the stories. Like, anybody who you ask about Gaelic football last year, a lot of the people who don't follow club football wouldn't talk to you about Cara Finn or Crokes. They talk to you about Mullinocta and that story, and to see the kind of the stories that came out of that club, and the, what scenes when they, you know, bet Gilmacud and everything that went with that. So, and I think that something like that is a real nice way to captivate kind of the championship. And so for hurling's sake, I hope that we do see, regardless of who wins this game, that we do see them kind of come on and kind of deliver. Like, Rath Downey have already gone further than a lot of these teams have in Leinster.
Yeah, exactly. There's no one, you know, for when you're looking at Carlo, look at Mount Leinster Rangers, they don't look too far away from home in terms of what they did a few years ago. In terms of the football, I suppose the big one is Niamh Connell against Clontibret. That's the standout one in my eyes. You got Niamh Connell, who are, this, they're turning into one of those stories in terms of the epic that they've gone through with Gwydor and then to beat Castlerahan, and they've had one weekend off. So sure was virtually a holiday for them. having 2 weeks to prepare for this. Clontibret, Conor McManus is just such a joy to watch. Like, he's glorious. He's one of those players that can light up a field, especially when you look at a club in a club game. You were up against Cross Midland the last day. He scored some outrageous points. So I actually am really looking forward to seeing this game. It's very hard to call.
Yeah, it is. And like, I think that's, you're going to see trying to shackle those kind of forwards. We spoke to this about club football. Like, the difference in intercounty, a good intercounty player makes in a club game is huge. The difference a great intercounty player makes is phenomenal. Even like, if you were to delve down into it, you could look at somebody like David Clifford. You just mentioned East Kerry beating Crokes last week. Like, David Clifford is starting in a club game and he's being marked by two intercounty players, and he's still managed to score 1-3. Like, so he's playing a club game with two intercounty players marking him. And
here's my hot take.
Okay.
David Clifford's goal, right? And he scored in the county final at the weekend.
So if anybody hasn't seen it, it's a loose enough solo, comes back and rattles it into the left top corner.
Yeah, exactly. It's up on Ball Study right now. You can go and watch it for yourself. It was a grand goal. It was a good goal.
But?
No, that's it. It was a good goal. People are kind of losing the run of themselves slightly, I think, because it's David Clifford. Now, I'm not trying to be, you know, say that David Clifford's so good at it. He's an incredible footballer and it was a good goal. It's just saying that, you know, we need to not let ourselves run away with ourselves here. We have to kind of just rein it back in a little bit.
Can I make a counter hot take?
Go on.
So this is David Clifford, what he has scored in his last 8 games, right? These are all finals, semi-finals or quarter-finals for Clubber County. 1-3 last weekend, 9 points in our semi-final, 1-6 in a quarter-final, 5 points in our Ireland final replay, 2 points in our Ireland final, 5 points in a semi-final, 3 points in a quarter-final, 7 points in a quarter-final against Mayo. I think that David Clifford, 20-year-old David Clifford, might actually be a tad underrated. I don't know. I hate that. I hate when people come out with that. So I'm not saying that, but I just don't think what he's doing is phenomenal. Like, it's unprecedented to see a player emerge like that. I know what you're saying about the goal. Like, the goal itself wasn't, I don't think it was like sensational. But when he got the ball, Paddy Clifford gets that ball, feeds it inside. Clifford is coming away from goal. When he gets the ball in his hands, if you were to stop there and put any other player in that position, you are not saying goal is on. There's just no way you're saying it. It's the fact that for David Clifford, a goal is always on. Like it always seems to be.
My point is more probably the finish than the run in.
Yeah, and everything else. But I actually think his brother Paddy, who got man of the match, like he. That's, you know, the claim that he's going to stake for Kerry is based off stuff like that. It's not like he's not going to be a David Clifford, and maybe it's the greatest shame that he is named Clifford, because he's always going to be held in that regard. But he's an orchestrator, he's not a finisher. So the ball he played in there was stunning, for that led to the Evan goal. I wonder, like, I appreciate what you're saying about the finish, but I do think that as a collective, like a goal is more than one kind of flash. It's a unit, and for that reason, that I disagree with you.
Just on that, lastly on that, Niamh Connell and Clontibber game we were talking about. Clontibber are 13-10 on Ladbrokes. Niamh Connell 5-6. It's very hard to say though. Like 6-1 there for a draw. Like a lot of these games, and again, it's only, you know, a bit of cracking. None of us were going in here kind of blind to these because we haven't played each other before, but. I would find it tough enough separate. The only thing is that Niamh Connell are probably actually speaking of teams or players that are underrated, they're probably a tad underrated, because to do what they've done, and they were always the outsider every time against Gwydor. That's the famous thing with the 12 apostles, where all the 12 lads in local media all went for Gwydor to beat Niamh Connell. And then like to do what they did against Castlerand, to go out and beat them. Castlerand, a very good team. But then Clontibber beat Cross McGlen, who were favourites at the time for the Ulster Championship. So
yeah,
6-1 there could be an interesting one for the draw.
I like that. I like your thinking there. Right, the reason I like it is because if there's one thing we've learned from the price for any of these things over the last weekend, or just looking at games, like just looking at these games themselves, there will be upsets. Like every single weekend we're talking about the upsets. It's trying to identify them so before it happens. So like you looked the last week, we actually both said that we don't think Cara Finn are in trouble. Now as it turns out, they like weren't close as enough. Impressive as certainly as they were last year, but at the same time they got the job done.
Actually had someone with a big shout who missed out just because Ballantubber
didn't win.
Lost to Cara Finn. We've had two big shout winners.
So if you're looking at this week, that's what you're trying to do. Make a case for underdogs. That's why I kind of actually looking at that Mullins game. That's why I like that. The other one that Clontibber 13-10. Yeah, I can see what you're thinking from that is Austin Sachs are floating totally under. Like they have been training. That we talked about this last week. So Austin Sachs didn't know if they were true or not until the Kerry final. As it turns out, they had been training. This is an Austin Stacks team that could have beaten East Kerry. Now, if East Kerry could go on from here, in a hypothetical scenario, East Kerry would be favourites for the All-Irelands. Like, I'm fully convinced that was a game that kind of proved their credentials, that they just totally dismissed All-Ireland finalists in Crokes. And based off that, you're looking at a Stacks team that had an absolute thriller, lost out to East Kerry. 6 goals that was scored that day. I think they lost by 5 in the end. They're going up against an Emo team. Like, again, this is the same thing about, you know, one of the lines I've heard this week is, they've never, Nemo have never lost against Austin Stacks. And then I was like, geez, that's an interesting stat. And then you go back and check. It's like, they played them once in 1975. I don't know how much you can read into that stat. So, Nemo, I mean, a fine team, but, you know, beating Newcastle West by a goal, how much can you read into that? I think that a 5-2 is a huge price. If you'd give me a euro for this, I think I'd put 50 cents on those two underdogs and see where I end up.
5-2. And the other one that just caught my eye in terms of games that you might have to say goodbye to your sweethearts here, or you might have to, I don't know if you're going to go with your patriotism in terms of Cara Finn being a Galway man, or your favourite getting football, Patrick Pearce's.
Cara Finn have a horrible capability to convince you that they're infallible, and then they'll just totally crush you. So Galway clubs know this too well. Tume very nearly, like, it's two finals in a row that they've been ran closest, were in the Galway County final, both times brought to a replay, and from there they've launched fairly dominant runs. And I think that the same thing again here, they're just timing their run to perfection. Like I don't think it's any great surprise that you're starting to see Kieran Fitzgerald, like Kieran Fitzgerald being reintegrated into a squad at the back end of a county championship looks weird, but I don't think the county championship is their goal, so it doesn't really matter. So like you see these players start to emerge. I think that Cara Finn are just timing a run, so I wouldn't be going against them there, unfortunately.
Anything else catch your eye in the games coming up?
Not really. Like I guess you're looking like I don't really think you can sell this weekend based off the, I don't know, like there's just too many way too short. So Ballyhale again are another one that are kind of one-sided. You're looking at Kilcoo and Derry Donnelly, like the whatever else, the championship being wide open, like, I don't think it is because Cara Finn, I think it looks like they're not, but Ulster now is a really, really interesting prospect. And for any of those teams, and I mean, to be honest, the same goes for the other side with Clontibret or Niamh Connell. Like, they're in their heads, I don't know if you get a better chance to win a championship.
I think pretty much every weekend there's been the favourite for the Ulster championship
has gone because
from county level on. So you got Gwydor, then you got Cross Midland, you know, and like Derry Connolly, I get Trillick were up there as well. Derry Connolly are a great story as well. They're, you know, coming from Fermanagh, such a small player base and such a small county championship as well. This is their second Ulster semi-final in 3 years, so like they've definitely earned it, winning that penalty
shootout
against Trillick. They're a big price. They're 9-2 against Kilcoo. I think now might be favourites overall to win
for Ulster.
Yeah, so again, it's because Kilcoo have been knocking at the door for a long time as well, so they have to be looking at this Ulster championship with the big guns kind of gone now, and they're going, finally, this is our time to shine. So yeah, like I think the both semi-finals in Ulster are going to be really interesting this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's what, like, ultimately that's what you're looking at. Like, you're looking at, it's not an outrageous thing to say, but there absolutely will be shocks this weekend, as there is every weekend. It's only about trying to pick them out.
Yeah, exactly. And if you are having any bets this weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly. Like we said, this is just a bit of crack. We're mostly wrong. Last week we ended up being right. But yeah, be sure to gamble responsibly, and you can visit dunlewy.net for more information. Morris, it's time to get your big shout. Big shout time, and what a big shout segment this week. We have our winner. Jeremy, you have done what nobody else has managed to do. You've won yourself two cakes in a sports biography. Now everybody else has the opportunity to try and follow in your footsteps, but they're never ever going to be the first. But look, nonetheless, two cakes and a sports biography are still two cakes in a sports biography. And I'm going to say it as many times as I possibly can in the space of 5 seconds. But if you want to enter this week, get in touch with us. Email thegaffer@balls.ie. Put the big shout in your subject line and send us your big shout. It has to be 25-1 or greater for the sport weekend, and it has to come off. And Morris Brosnan is going to try and win it himself this week. Morris, what have you got for us?
So, in lieu of our success, with our success from last week.
Yeah, I like to say our success as well. As the podcast, we're jumping on the bandwagon.
We played a defining role in that success. So like a club championship, we're building towards this time of the year. So as we said, we peaked with the GAA, peaked with the big shout. And I've actually picked a fivefold across five sports.
Nice.
For this weekend. So it is kind of in line with keeping each of these sports exciting for me. So like a small little way of tracking it. So there's only one place to start, really. That's Ireland against New Zealand. Troy Parrott to score anytime, 6-4. We know he's going to start. We know that Mick doesn't want to play him on Monday. It is written in the stars that he's going to shine. The pressure's going to be on for him to play on Monday to score. The other one, the NFL, we're going to talk about that in a second. But the pick I have is the New England Patriots against the Philadelphia Eagles at 1-2. The Pats are coming off a week's bye. Straight away Belichick off a bye is notorious that you know he'll have this game, he'll have them well prepared for this. As well as that, this is the revenge game for what the Eagles did to the Patriots when the Eagles won the Super Bowl. And I think that both from Belichick coming off a bye and a chance to get revenge, them against the Eagles is a sure thing. Niamh Connell and Clontibret. I'm going for Clontibret here.
I like it. Clontibret, when we were talking about it earlier in the GAA, it was like Clontibret are that team that are going to be constantly outsiders going into every game, yet are going to keep winning. Like, there's just like East Kerry Ware and the Kerry Championship, like Mullinocta would have been last year.
Yeah, yeah.
So that feeling, I was like, they're going to, like, no matter how many games they seem to win, people aren't going to pay them that respect, because probably you're looking at Scotstown being such a dominant force in Monaghan before. But like, I'm telling you, like, they had that game almost won at half time the way it was with the Castle or the Cross Midland game.
Because
it was such terrible conditions, it was so hard to get scores. They got into an early lead and they were only able to sit on it.
Quickly then, back to football. Brazil and Argentina. I'm going for Brazil at 5-4
in that game.
That game's on this weekend. And then finally, Stephen has convinced me that Munster minus 10 is worth showing in here as well. So Munster minus 10 in the rugby against the Ospreys. All that mark comes in at 36-1.
Wow. And there's nothing there that I can say
definitely won't come off. Yeah,
come off.
Yeah,
like, there's a lot of shouts that are like the Clontibret one. It's finger in the air stuff. But again, it's not like where Mick last week decided that all three games on Sunday were going to be a draw. That's not happening. So yeah, and obviously none of the games in the Premier League ended up being a draw. So he was a million mile away from that one. We didn't actually, because of German winning, we didn't pay enough attention to the fact how wrong Mick was. But I like that, Morris. We could be sitting here next week and we could have our second. We could have two winners, 2 weeks in a row.
To the big shout, yeah.
From within the office. We'll see you good with your NFL picks now in a second. Morris, thankfully, I have not been left in charge of the NFL picks this week. Although I am flying in fantasy football. I'm so good at it at the moment that I forgot to do it last week. And I had three players not playing and I still managed to get 111 points. So I'm going well there. But you were in charge this week. You had a bad beat actually in the fantasy football league in the office. You had the second highest points of anyone in the league yet,
and
lost.
I still lost. Yeah,
with 30 points.
Yeah, and I had Christian Kirk, the Cardinals wide receiver, my starting wide receiver, who got 2 points, and my on the bench wide receiver who got 35 points, which would just made it all the worse. I've decided that I was playing for this is a bit of inside baseball here. I was playing Brian here in the office. For those who were worried about what would happen if Ireland won the Rugby World Cup, that is what will happen if Brian wins the fantasy league in this office.
He's unstoppable. He's an unstoppable juggernaut. And I'm not quite sure he knows what is going on or what he's doing. He can't stop winning.
This weekend is a interesting-ish one in the NFL. Like the playoff picture, if anything, is we are in week 11. And if anything, the playoff picture is actually becoming more confusing. So
well, for instance, Miami Dolphins, who actually Mick got right in his picks last week, I think they're on the longest winning streak in the AFC East at the minute.
And the weird thing, so if you're watching NFL, you've got, there's two kind of categories of bad teams. There's teams that are losing and there's teams that are tanking. So what generally happens is if a team is tanking, it's kind of like manufactured. You're looking for the first draft pick for the year after. It's generally an office, the behind the scenes policy away from the team, who would look to, they may trade away a couple of players and might orchestrate like as a fresh slate, start again. That's what it looked like Miami were doing this season.
They might still be, and then they're absolutely making the balls of it by winning games.
Yeah, their problem is that Miami appointed a coach who's actually too good to tank. So they got Brian Flores, who is really good, and a quarterback who's capable of doing anything in both a positive and a negative sense. And because of that, they end up, you know, on a two-game winning streak. They're playing the Bills this week. I don't like that.
That's because the Bills are class, Morris. My favorite team in the NFL. We're going all the way.
I don't like that. Well, I do.
The bloody Browns last week, though.
What I do like is, yeah, I'll turn up the books, losing to a Freddie Kitchens team.
That's the Mark Farley effect, I believe, called
that in the industry. The first one I like is the Cardinals. The 49ers, right, are playing, the San Francisco 49ers are playing the Arizona Cardinals. Now, the 49ers were on the last team who looked like they were going to go for an unbeaten season. Really good coach, unbelievable quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo, but they lost to the Seahawks after overtime, and that was the Monday night game. Yeah. And you're turning around to play again against a Cardinals team. Now, I still think they'll beat the Cardinals and beat them easy, but I don't think that they beat them by 11 points. So I think that what Arizona Cardinals have going for them is that they now have Christian Kirk, who I just mentioned, who I will definitely start in fantasy this week, put up 35 points last week. They've got a rookie quarterback who is on the cusp of offensive rookie of the year in Kyler Murray, a guy who like shows all the telltale signs of a really intelligent, you know, when you, I don't know if you remember watching Patrick Mahomes last year, or if you're watching Lamar Jackson this year, like it feels like stuff that is uncoachable, where a player like spins out of the pocket, comes under pressure, and just kind of makes really intelligent decisions, split second decisions. And Kyler Murray is all the trademarks of that. So with a offense like that, I think that they could probably do some damage against the 49ers. So I like the Cardinals to cover there.
Just on that as well. Now, I have the San Francisco defense, and they conceded over 20 points the last 2 weeks. 1 week, they got absolutely nothing basically from it. Last week, they conceded even more again, yet got 19 points. Do I play them? Do I not?
I think you do. I think you do. Like, Kyler Murray is kind of, I actually have Kyler Murray in fantasy as well, and he's a great fantasy player, but he is liable to throw a pick, or as any rookie is, like, to, you know, take a sack, throw a pick, make a bad wrong decision, that kind of, just like stuff that will be ironed out as the years go on. But because of that, even if he is, you know, making yards, finding receivers, you'll still probably get points if he does throw a pick. And just, so I think you probably do trust in against any of the kind of those like lower level teams, which the Cardinals are. I think you trust in your defense. It's when they like against we actually spoke with this off air about coming up against Hustle and Bustle Wilson. What do you do in a circumstance like that? The Kansas City Chiefs are having a bizarre year. So they're elite level. Who looked like the best quarterback in the league and Patrick Mahomes got injured, dislocated his kneecap. They brought in a veteran second choice, Matt Moore, who actually wasn't bad. And it turns out that regardless of what happens to their offense, that's not the problem. The problem is on the other side of the ball, and that their defense is terrible. So they lost in one of the most disgusting manners possible against Tennessee at the weekend. But it'll come down to the Chiefs is outscoring teams. That's just what they're going to have to do. So they were winning at the very end of the game. We're chasing it back. Got a field goal to win the game. basically, you've got a snapper in your O-line. You've got the player who snaps the ball. Mikael Schwartz is the guy who snaps the ball for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's on a consecutive run of 7,500 snaps in a row. This guy is never injured. Came off injured. On the very next play, after he comes off injured, the guy who replaces him also gets injured and has to come off as well. So now your O-line is in a total disarray. Because of that, they get a few goals to level the game, snap the ball. The placeholder, so Booker is their kicker, but you've got the guy who places the ball for him that's sitting right beside him, isn't ready. So catches the ball, panics, and throws the ball to nobody, which is an illegal grounding. So they get the ball back again. And then it's one of the, actually, if you haven't seen this, they get another field goal attempt after that. And try and very similar thing. Thankfully, the placeholder kickholder is ready this time. Places the ball, but somebody it's in their formation. I don't think he was offside. Like I think he timed it to millisecond perfection. That he just started his sprint as the ball was snapped, and his sprint was so perfect that nobody could get a guard on him, nobody get a block. So he was able to get and dive, kind of like as like a good cornerback diving at the boot of a full forward, and got a tip on the ball, and so the field goal wasn't kicked. They lost the game. They're playing the LA Chargers. This game is in Mexico. An interesting fact about Patrick Mahomes, we just mentioned there, the genius quarterback. Patrick Mahomes reckons that because this game is in Mexico, he can throw the ball 100 yards. So that's something to do with something to do with altitude. Yeah, altitude and ball pressure. That in this circumstance, that he's and you know Mahomes is a good player, and if he can throw a ball even better in Mexico, then I'm trusting them to beat the spread against the Chargers. that's the late game. That's after this weekend. That's the Chiefs are -4, by the way. There, then elsewhere, right? You're looking and you're like, there's a couple of games that I wouldn't touch. So you've got like the Redskins and the Jets. That is a bonkers game. I actually have no idea what's going to happen there. A team that were impressive at the weekend were the Panthers. Panthers played a really enjoyable game on Sunday night against the Packers. They've got at the very start of the year, if you were looking at MVP race, everybody was talking about Cam Newton. Cam Newton looks set to have a breakout year. Falcons screwed Mick last week, where the Saints, one of the weirdest losses of the year, Saints lost to the Falcons. Falcons who've been awful this year, like really, really poor. And I think that there's more chance that was a one-off than that's the start of something. I think the Panthers have been coming good. They've got, you know, you talk about MVP candidates this year, and generally it's always quarterbacks, the most important position in football. But suddenly you've got a running back who is a legitimate MVP contender in McCaffrey for the Panthers. Pairing him with a rookie quarterback, but a guy who, Allen, who like keeps his head, he's cool. There's a legitimate discussion to be had that maybe the Panthers, if Cam Newton was to return, now he's been delisted, so he is injured. But even if he was fit and available, fit and healthy, like, do you start a running quarterback with a running back like McCaffrey? Like, is that actually suited to the team? Suddenly now you're seeing reports that they won't play for the Panthers again, that he might be move on next year. Based off that, I think that the Panthers at -5. The Falcons screwed us once. I don't think they're going to screw us again. So I'm going to go with the Panthers to cover there as well.
So to round that off, your picks are Cardinals +11, Chiefs -4. Panthers, were they -4.5?
The Chiefs are -4 and the Panthers are -5.5.
Panthers minus five and a half. So Like, look, Morris, if you get all three of these, there's a chance Mick might not be out.
Coming back
onto the podcast.
Fat chance of that.
But thank you very much for joining me on the podcast today. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Be sure to enter a competition to win the tickets to the Ireland-Denmark game on Monday. Like I said earlier on in the show, all you have to do is search the build-up on balls.ie in the podcast feed. Subscribe, obviously, if you haven't already. Get down, leave a rating and leave a review. And then just email us, or you can even tweet us or whatever, a screenshot of your review, just so we can get in touch with you if you do end up winning the prize. If you're having any bets this weekend, be sure to gamble responsibly and visit dunlewy.net for more information. But until next week, mind yourself.